Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Nikunji Patel, an applications delivery manager for Bax at Vocalink. So actually, something we were talking about earlier amongst ourselves, I suppose on the recruitment side, was about what we're looking for next, what kind of technologies we need to start looking at and kind of investing in. And I suppose it probably makes sense to ask someone who actually knows a thing or two about technology. So I know, you know, particularly in your space, you know, QA development, you know, testing, I think that it's a particularly interesting area. But before we kind of get into the why, thought I'd kind of pose the question across to you, and what your kind of thoughts are, you know, maybe specifically to yourself, about emerging technologies and things that you think we need to be conscious of, because it might be something that I suppose we need to consider skilling up in.
So technology wise, if you're talking particularly the payments industries, it's all about seamless payments. What we can't have is if you think about before internet banking came along, there was no concept. You had to go into a bank to make a payment. Now the expectation is I should be able to pay for anything, anywhere, anyhow. So it's making sure that your back end, your infrastructure and your service that you provide is open to that way of working. So that means designing your solutions, designing your software, designing the way you work, being open to any access forms. So that could be mobile, could be internet, it could be telephone. You shouldn't constrain the design of your application, the technology you use, and the stack you put in place to be specific to an access media. So that's again taking the concept of services and treating payment as a service, not specific. So check is a great example of how wrong you can get something. I mean, it takes 3 days to clear a check in this modern day and age. That's just bonkers. Why should I have to wait 3 days for the funds to clear onto my account? There should be a way of making an immediate check payment if you want to use that. Likewise, if I want to pay someone, I shouldn't have to use my card reader to put my debit card in. That gives me a jumbled up set of numbers, which I then have to type in to then make a payment to someone. I should be able to just make a payment to someone, and the back end should be able to help me and take care of that, the security for me. So from a technology stack, it's moving away. I mean, there's a bit of duality going on here. I mean, if you look at companies like, say, Netflix or of that nature, they started off going completely cloud. Now they've taken all their infrastructure in-house. So there's been a complete backlash in certain areas and bringing all the technology stack back in-house again, so bringing the hardware. So basically, you manage your own set of infrastructure to host your services. Now, that one I'm keeping a real close eye on, because for me, cloud-based is the way to go. Why should I pay tens of thousands of pounds a year to maintain my own hardware stack when I can ask Amazon to do it for me, who then take care of all the other stuff that I don't need to worry about, which is it performant? Is it scalable? Will it work in 10 years? I shouldn't have to worry about that. All I should have to worry about is my service and the service I'm providing to my customers. So your technology solution needs to fit into that sort of model.
It's like you say, I think it's interesting, and I suppose it also poses a question for me. It's like the outcomes as is an interesting one. I don't think that the outcomes and what we demand, it's still very much a user-generated demand, isn't it? It's not innovations that people are kind of necessarily bringing to the marketplace as something that's brand new. The demands are still kind of there and we're just getting better at it. Do you think that that's kind of a fair point? And is that, I suppose, with your background and, you know, how long you've been in tech now, has that changed at all, the outcomes that you've worked to get towards on various projects? Or is it just the technology?
No, absolutely. It's all driven by the consumer in the end. It's what people have appetite for. I mean, by appetite, okay, if you think a few years ago, if you look at the demographic of the population, it was of an ilk born in the 50s, 60s and 70s. They weren't used to technology. Now, if you look at the demographic, people are used to using your mobiles. They're used to doing stuff electronically. Horrible thing to say, but the older generation are slowly going where we all go eventually, and therefore the appetite for change, the appetite to try new things is there. There is a ability to push the boundary of what you do much better, and people are happy to take that risk. Whereas if you look at my parents' generation, they wouldn't even dream of making a payment over a phone. They wouldn't even dream of logging on to the internet to have a look at what their balance is. They always used to go into a bank and see a person. That face, that person has disappeared, and you can see that being reflected in retail banking and the way branches work and the way branches are set up. Counters have gone. iPads have replaced counters because there is no appetite to speak to anyone anymore because you can do it all electronically. So it's risk. It's how much risk the consumer is prepared to take, and they're certainly the younger generation, my kids' generation, they're more than happy doing it, but they're oblivious to that risk, which is also concerning. That's where we, as a service provider, help and make sure that there is the appropriate controls in place to protect the consumer by what we do.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think there's a lot around that. I think it was actually really, you know, thanks for that. It really well articulated, I suppose, as we look at the kind of the ways that the generation have perspective on things. And certainly there's actually, although the most technically advanced will be the newest generation, they're also probably the most, as you put, the most oblivious and also the most in need of the education about the fundamentals of technology, how these things actually work. It's kind of a interesting one that this generation is so oblivious to, you know, how things work under the hood, sort of thing, for lack of a better term. And also, as you well put, the risk associated with, you know, I suppose online banking is the probably the most obvious one. But it's quite interesting, isn't it? And I think that's only happened because of the rate of change that things have happened. I think we've had, you know, the Industrial Revolution and such, but we have never had things change this quickly before. And I think that's why we have, you know, such these clearly defined generations seemingly now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, my generation was the one where the internet first started. And we were using things like Gopher and things like that. So and literally in the space of 20 years, it's completely changed. But that has a bearing also on us in technology, because the systems we developed, like especially the one I look after now, is ancient. It's how we then adapt the service that we've got, which is legacy, to the modern world. How do you as a company, as an IT leader or whatever, manage that path of your application to the modern requirements? And it's extremely challenging because the technology that we're using right now doesn't fit what we want to do, and we're having to manage it. And it's an extremely difficult thing to manage and a very difficult path to tread.
So with that, how are you kind of having to deal with that, I suppose, from, you know, the inner workings perspective, from an agile, you know, Scrum perspective? You know, how important are these methodologies now, you know, even in the instance as you just discussed?
So to me, it's not about the methodology. It's, if you think about software development, when I started in software development, when I was a developer years ago, it was all about we must do it, we must do it in a certain way. Doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as it's right. Now, because of the risk appetite and the risk profile has changed, you can get away to a certain degree with not developing a bulletproof solution. So what I like to do, or what I've done over the past 10, 12 years, is to get across that 80% complete will return more value than spending another 2-3 weeks making it 100% complete. So where Agile and Kanban and Scrumban and all the different variants, Lean and whatever, comes into it, it allows us to react to the market much quicker. It allows us to change tact very quickly, whereas still maintaining control, which is really important, control, and maintaining the quality of the service that you offer. By control, I mean this is not cowboy land. This is people's money we're dealing with. These are real people's pensions, and these are direct debits and mortgage payments that we're messing around with every day. So this is not a free fall. It's all about having a controlled risk profile of how you work and how you deliver software into the market.
Interesting. So, you know, with that kind of said, I do want to talk a little bit about kind of your background and experiences. I know we've like briefly mentioned it. You know, you've obviously worked throughout your career in technology, but how has the role changed, I suppose, outside of, you know, the kind of shift into testing or development or whatever. But throughout those changes, how has the role changed over the last 10 years or so? You know, both technologically speaking, but also the way that, you know, the team dynamics have changed as well.
So in terms of the team, I think that's been the biggest change over the last few years is been the dynamic of software development and how that interfaces to the rest of the company. We were very much in the good old days. We just sat downstairs in the Sun Spark server room, and we just cut code and we shipped it across and didn't really care what did it deliver any business value. We didn't care if it meant anything. We just cut code because we liked being engineers, and we loved coding because it was a really good thing to do. Now there's been a complete shift, complete movement onto value and ensuring that what you do delivers value to the customer and absolutely delivers value to the organization that's delivering and making that software. So there's much more focus on your return on your investment. What am I doing? Is it the right thing to do? If I do this, what does it mean to the bottom line, to the profit that company makes? So there's been a big shift to the value chain has come right down to us in development. It's no longer owned. That P&L is no longer owned in the business layer. It's owned by us effectively, and we're in charge of delivering that value to the company. Obviously supported by everyone else around us, but we're central to that. Whereas before we were at the periphery of that. We were seen as these are the guys with the sandals and the white socks and the pocket protectors who just did stuff, but weren't actually worried about us as a company or were not worried about the profit as much.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because I said this the other day, and someone corrected me and said, I don't think it's 100% right, but I was on the right tracks. And my point was that I felt that there's a lot more now that's expected of technical people. And what I meant by that was about from the business perspective side of things. It's not just, you're not just expected to be able to do things technically now. You're also expected to understand kind of the purpose when it comes to business outcomes of what you're actually doing. And that was kind of my point. And I think that that's very much the case. And even from a recruitment perspective now, we have to consider these things when we're looking for applicants, because hiring managers need people who aren't also just technically capable, but they're also able to understand things from a high level perspective. And it seems that that's becoming increasingly more important now.
No, you're absolutely right. When I'm hiring, when I'm recruiting, if I've got two candidates side by side, one's technically brilliant but couldn't talk to a barn door, whereas the other one is not so technically brilliant, i.e. his code and his classes and his methods and his structures and his way of working won't be the most efficient way of doing that, but they get the job done. But yet he can articulate what he's doing very well to a customer at their language, I will take them on more than someone who's technically absolutely brilliant who can't talk to anyone. And that's been a big fundamental shift in my recruiting patterns over the last sort of 10 years. Before, it was all about you have to be a brilliant coder, you have to be a brilliant developer, you have to be a brilliant tester. No, it's now you need to do more. You need to be able to articulate what you do to the appropriate audience that you're working with, because we are much more closely bound to the business, to business analysis, to finance. We're all accountable to those functions, and we need to speak to them in the language that they understand.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's, I can imagine being very difficult to actually find that, or increasingly harder.
It's not impossible. And if I find them, that's why my network is so big. I always try and bring them with me wherever I go.
Yeah. So, you know, talking about, you know, the work that you've been involved with lately, you know, you say it's you're working predominantly on testing now, right?
No, I do everything. I look after the entire development team. So that's tests and development and an average.
So, you know, how is that, you know, I personally think it's quite a compelling, you know, area with it. I don't think there's too many more that are much more compelling. But when you work on these projects, there has to be like a huge amount of, I suppose, creativity. And do you think that that's something that people don't actually, well, they're not aware of when they look at, you know, a development team, is the amount of creativity actually involved? And it's almost, I was talking about this the other day, and they were talking about the entrepreneurship and the way that a lot of technical people think. They're actually not too dissimilar now.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So it's all about efficiency. It's all about the way you work, whether it be test or development or analysis, is doing that in the most efficient way. If you're cutting some code, if you're creating a method, if you're creating a function, is that the most efficient way I can do it? So you're constantly challenging yourself and questioning yourself and learning and adapting from what you've just done to make sure you're still current, you're still up to date, and that is the right way to do it. And when we're not scientists, we're engineers, we still have to produce something at the end. And the engineering principles that you follow are absolutely fundamental. So you do need to have a good grounding. You can't get away from good computer science or good experience in this, but you need to have that sound footing and founding before you can move on to the next level to give you that grounding. If you don't have that, for example, app designers, when Apple and those guys first started releasing apps onto the App Store, technically, it was the most atrocious piece of coding that you could ever imagine. But they were quick, and it provided the service that you wanted, but they were not scalable long-term. They were not maintainable long-term. And that's what I'm looking for, is people have that dual edge. They can get something out quickly, but they're not worried about boilerplating it, but they know that they need to do X, Y, and Z to make this maintainable long-term. So it's finding that rare skill set where they can balance technology against outcome, against value, that classic triangle, and balancing those out.
It's an interesting space at the moment, and I mean that from a people's perspective. How do you think that the continued impact of things like AI and machine learning and things like that, do you think they're going to have the impact that I think a lot of people are expecting them to have?
I don't think so. There will be, that's one area where I don't think we would be scared. I think we've all watched too many films. I think the area where that will have the biggest impact is around big data and around trawling through the masses of information that is out there on us as individuals to be able to know what we want to do with that information. There is so much information that's held on the internet, in the cloud, about us as individuals. Where AI might be helpful, or where that big data concept will be helpful, is to analyze that data to be able to predict what we want. So what I mean by that is, there's an interesting app that I helped develop that if you went past a store, it sent you a message that you're going past this store, you're a valued member, come in and we'll give you 10% off. That sort of intelligent messaging, that sort of intelligent marketing directly to your phone, that shows that we as an individual know exactly what you're doing, what you've exactly bought from us, and therefore come in, we'll give you some money and come in and buy something. And then on top of that, having a payment service that allows you to pay for that seamlessly. So it's effectively moving to a cashless society based on the intelligence of the information that's already out on the cloud about you as an individual.
I think that we're overvaluing data in a lot of instances. Certainly that's my opinion. And you need that data, obviously, to be able to create the AI and such. So it will be, I think there's too many variables because of humans to be able to accurately have the impact that we're all expecting.
I don't know. I quite like the concept of push, where we're being pushed information that someone already holds about us. It's interesting what they can do with that information and what they can glean from you as an individual to then predict what you're going to do. Certainly if you go into, what is it, Facebook, the ads that you get are they're very clever in terms of how they post the ad that you've been looking at recently. And it's, in some ways it's scary, but in some ways for me as a technologist, it's riveting what they can do with big data. It really is. And it helps us in the financial industry big time because we're, certainly one of the teams that work here are looking at trawling through the vast amount of financial data we have to help security and to help money laundering, money mules, that sort of stuff. I think that's where it's going to be huge. Detect terrorist accounts, all that sort of stuff, using patterns of spending. When you're detecting those patterns, do you ever then trawl through looking for that occurrence of that pattern again to help with effectively world security? And that is very, very powerful.
I think so. I suppose I tend to agree with on some, but I think that, as you said, I think in some instances we probably just watched a little bit too much television.
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever have a robot that comes and cleans for us, put it that way.
I don't want to keep you too much longer, but, I suppose closing thoughts for me are each project or each job or each role that you've had. I think a lot of people walk away from things in instances and think, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that. You know, not talking about specific projects, but just from a high level perspective, what gives you, I suppose, a great feeling of satisfaction and accomplishment when you kind of walk away from something?
It's seeing your people grow. Absolutely. It's all about the people. It's not about technology. It's not about introducing the world's fanciest microservices architecture on a scalable cloud solution in Amazon. It's about watching the individuals that you look after day to day growing as people, growing as technologists and able to support that company in what it's doing. For me, it's about making sure the people that work for me are challenging and pushing themselves and are able to freely question, is this the right way we're doing it? What about if we try this? Is to bring something new to the game every single day of the week. And seeing people brave enough to make that decision to say, no, this is wrong. I think we should try this. Let's give it a go. Likewise, not being afraid to fail. For me, one of my key sort of things I like to get across to the team is do not be afraid to fail. Failure is the only way to learn. And I think if I walk away from my current company, and few people have taken that on board and are doing that, then for me, that's a win.
I like that. I like that a lot. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.